This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, day 467 of our war and of hostages in Gaza. And of course, we still are very much in limbo. We'll talk a little bit more about the details of where we are today. But just an interesting snippet from yesterday, I spoke about the fact that we'd been up on Monday night because of a Houthi missile that was fired from Yemen. And the reports that we received were that the IDF thought that the incoming missile had been intercepted, but they didn't really seem sure about what had happened. They just reported that there weren't any injuries reported. There was no damage reported from the missile attack itself. And then a family in Mavor Beitar yesterday, who'd been in their bomb shelters overnight, like many of us, decided to go for a walk outside of their home. And as they went out of their home, they observed a missile embedded in the roof of their house. And that apparently was where the missile landed yesterday was intercepted by an Israeli anti-missile system. It landed in the roof. I mean, it literally broke through the roof tiles and into the frame of the house. The family, who had been in their bomb shelter when all of this was going on, didn't hear or suspect anything about what had happened in their roof. So they must have been in a secure room, which was so secure that you couldn't really even hear anything about what was going outside of where they were. And all of a sudden, then the reports came in saying, actually, the missile fell in that home. And fortunately, no injuries were incurred, even though some damage was done to the house. So that was just a really, really strange story, because even people in their bomb shelters can usually kind of get a sense of things that are going on outside. But in this particular case,
well, especially if it's just coming crashing through your roof.
Yeah, it was just really, really crazy.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, they are blessed and they're very lucky because that is incredible.
And the message is reinforced. Do go to your bomb shelters. Do go to your safe rooms. This is such an important message that we have learned over and over again in good and bad ways during the course of this war, is that the bomb shelters and the safe rooms are an absolute critical part of our defense system. And even though we've got very sophisticated anti-missile systems and very sophisticated tracking weaponry and all of those things, and yet at the end of the day, the safe rooms and the bomb shelters are almost as important, maybe even more important than all of the sophisticated technology.
Yeah, absolutely right. Let's talk about the protesters yesterday. They were out in the streets of Tel Aviv last night to protest in favor of the hostage release deal. Then there were protesters, as far as I understand, against the deal in Jerusalem. What is the latest here? What is the current position?
I think that the current position is that there are so many reports and counter reports and misinformation going around that in all honesty, we don't know really what to believe anymore. I noticed that Sky News was saying that Hamas has accepted the deal and they were waiting for Israel to respond. US Secretary of State Antony Blinken made it clear that Israel had accepted the proposed hostage release deal, and that we were waiting for Hamas to give their answer. There were even rumors circulating yesterday about who would be the first hostages to be released. under this deal, because it seems as if though there will be a staged release of hostages under the current proposal of the deal, even in the first stage. So that these 33, I think, hostages who are due to be released in the first stage will not all be released at once. Apparently, there will be a group of, I don't know how many, between 3 and 6, depending on who you believe, who will be released on day one, and then further releases sort of on a weekly basis as we progress into the stage. But in all honesty, as much as people are touting it, and there's a lot of fanfare from the US administration and from various quarters saying the deal is done, incoming US President Donald Trump yesterday said hands were shaken. I don't know who shook whose hands, but apparently there was a handshake on the deal. So we really don't know what the current status is. What we do know is that because of the change of US administration, which is due to take place on Monday, there is a massive amount of attention being drawn to this and a huge effort to try and bring things to some conclusion before the change of administration. But in terms of Israeli society, and I mentioned this yesterday, about people really being split about what they think about the deal, it's becoming more and more evident of the splits within our society. And to say that we just have two groups, one group who are in favor and one group who are against, would be kind of making things too simple, because it's really not like that. On the one hand, we have a group of people who are saying a deal almost at any price, even if it involves releasing one hostage, even if it involves releasing not all of the names, even if it involves some sort of partial solution, just do a deal because everyone is important. And if we can secure the release of one, then that's better than none. That's one group of people. There's another group of people, particularly, I should add, hostage families whose loved ones are not amongst those who are due to be released in the first stage. So hostage families whose loved ones are not effectively in the first group of 33 names, they're saying, don't do this deal, because effectively that consigns their loved ones to being caught in Gaza probably indefinitely. And the view is that if Israel gives massive concessions now at stage one in order to release the 33 or 34, whoever it is that will come home in the first stage, then the remaining 64 names who are still not part of this original deal, what will Israel be able to give for them? What will be left after you've given over the kitchen sink in order to secure those remaining 64 hostages? And therefore, what likelihood is there that they may come home ever? And so there is a group of people who are saying, don't do a partial deal. It's either a deal for everybody or a deal for nobody. And I think that that's quite a tough decision to take, to effectively consign the first 34, many of whom we know are alive, or we're being told are alive, to consign them to remain in captivity because we don't know the fate of the remaining 64. Then, of course, there are those people led most effectively by Itamar Ben-Gvir and Bezalel Smotrich, who are saying, don't do a deal at all, no deal, because we feel that what Israel is compromising on, what Israel is capitulating on, to use the word that I mentioned yesterday, which has been touted around, is too expensive a price to pay for our hostages to come home, and therefore we would prefer not to pay that price. And the price involves ending the war, and the price involves withdrawing troops from Gaza, because they have in their minds that Israel should remain in Gaza on an ongoing basis, and therefore any withdrawal from Gaza now would be undesirable. Now, my view is that the only reason why Israel still remains in Gaza at this time is really, there are really two main reasons. Reason number one is to secure the release of our hostages, and therefore anything that we can do to bring any hostages home, I think, should be done. I think the second reason is to somehow create a new look for tomorrow in Gaza. How can we create a situation in Gaza that will not replicate where we were before? And that is the subject in itself of a very, very interesting discussion, and maybe now's not the time to hold it. But U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, days before he's due to leave office, gave quite a detailed speech yesterday to the Atlantic Council, where he laid out the Biden administration's view on post-war Gaza. And he made some quite interesting points, many of which I don't agree with and I think are not valid. But he was quite critical of the Israeli government that effectively they don't agree with the U.S. administration's view. And just to summarize what the U.S. administration's view is, their view is get the Palestinian Authority to assume control for post-war Gaza and let them lead the reconstruction effort and let them be the administration in Gaza. My simple response to all of that, and there are lots and lots of details, lots of wrinkles, which we will discuss in more details, I'm guessing, at some future time. But my initial response is, we've tried this before. The Palestinian Authority was the authority in charge of Gaza when Israel first withdrew, and we all know where that went to. So I don't know why we would necessarily agree freely, without getting into more detail, to allow that scenario to replicate itself again. But again, you know, everybody's got their views on this. Howard, I'm sure you have your view, and I hope the listeners are also forming their views and will communicate and let us know what they think also about the hostage release, as well as, of course, what post-war Gaza might look because that's something that's hard to understand.
Well, it is hard to understand, and I understand what the Americans want, but I don't actually understand what Netanyahu or Israel is envisioning. And I think, isn't that really part of the criticism or part of the problem, is that there doesn't appear to be, well, certainly not publicly, there doesn't appear to be a consolidated plan.
I agree with that, by the way. And Antony Blinken, in his address to the Atlantic Council yesterday, didn't mention what Israel's view is. He just said that he criticized Israel for not necessarily agreeing with this approach. But he didn't say they don't have a view, or they do have a view, and this is what it is. But you're right. We don't know what Israel's post-war vision is for Gaza. We know what Smotrich and Ben-Gvir would like, but we don't know what the Israeli government's point of view is. And I just wonder whether that's a good or a bad thing, and whether, you know, there were people yesterday who were saying that Blinken's address to the Atlantic Council could potentially damage the hostage release agreement. So I wonder whether the Netanyahu government is holding its counsel in the hope that whatever they might say about future post-war Gaza doesn't necessarily impact on a potential hostage release agreement.
The other subject we wanted to just chat about was that five IDF soldiers were killed in an operation in Gaza on Monday. I know that there was an investigation into this. Do we know what happened?
Well, the initial reports suggested that these five soldiers from the Nahal Brigade were killed by an explosion. And there were a number of other soldiers who were quite seriously injured. And unfortunately, we've lost quite a number of soldiers in Gaza over the last week or two. We've suddenly seen a significant increase in the number of IDF soldiers being killed and injured in Gaza. And so it does beg the question as to what is going on in Gaza right now, why this is happening, and of course what happened in that incident where five soldiers were killed, which was so, so sad and really put a massive cloud, a heavy cloud of our society when the news broke about the death of these five soldiers. And we understand now that it was probably what we would call in the business a work accident, where they were actually killed by their own explosives. What the reporter said is that they were laying down explosives in a building when the explosives that they were working with exploded. And we didn't know whether they exploded because potentially there was an attack from outside which detonated those explosives, or whether they were detonated by some incident, an internal work incident. It seems now, even though we don't have the final word on it, that there was some internal issue, a health and safety issue that resulted in these explosives being detonated and the loss of very, very valuable lives, and in a very, very tragic way for us, with a number of other soldiers, as I've said, also being being hurt quite badly as a result of this explosion. But this kind of demonstrates a very significant point to us, because many people were critical of the IDF operation in Gaza, particularly when the IDF had managed to clear a certain area of terrorists, and then there seemed to be wholesale destruction of buildings and residences, and it seemed to have no purpose, no reason why there was such massive destruction going on. There was huge criticism I saw in the press about, once the IDF have secured a certain area, why would they go about destroying it? Well, I think there are two reasons, and I think it's important for listeners to know, you know, the potentially the other side of this argument. In the first instance, even though the IDF might have secured certain areas, there might still be booby traps within those buildings. There might still be explosives and weapons and other things that were hidden in those buildings. And even though they might be under the control of the IDF, instead of having to go room by room, building by building, searching and potentially exposing yourselves to the danger of booby traps, it seems to be just easier to destroy those buildings. But now, many of the buildings that were left intact, and the IDF have moved on to other areas, have been repopulated by Gazan, by Hamas terrorists, by people who've joined the five people who were still left over from the previous Hamas battalions. They've retaken over those areas, and they're using that now against IDF soldiers. And so there's a certain regret that some of those buildings weren't destroyed in the original attacks that were carried out, and for that reason we are paying the price. So that's the reason why there appeared to be some wholesale destruction, because to the extent that those buildings weren't destroyed, unfortunately they now present a threat to us.
Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8:01. We can catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.